from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next up on this morning's Forum program, Elon Musk has achieved success across multiple industries with Tesla Motors, SolarCity, and SpaceX, all under his leadership. A new biography by Bloomberg reporter Ashley Vance digs into the stories behind Musk's success, the CEO's desire to colonize Mars, and the respect and fear his employees reportedly have for him, as well as his personal story. And Vance joins us to talk about his new book, Elon Musk, Tesla, SpaceX, and the quest for a fantastic future. Join us for Forum. It's up next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of this morning's Forum program. Elon Musk has been transforming the auto industry with Tesla electric cars, producing cheap solar power throughout the United States with SolarCity, and building state-of-the-art rockets and spacecraft cheaper than all of the competition with SpaceX. Each of these companies, worth around $10 billion, are led by Musk, a South Africa-born inventor, entrepreneur, and engineer who made a fortune earlier on with PayPal. Now we have a biography of Musk by Ashley Vance, who for many years was a reporter on Silicon Valley and technology for the New York Times and is now with Bloomberg Businessweek. His book is called Elon Musk, Tesla, SpaceX, and the Quest for a Fantastic Future, and he joins us in studio for the second Forum Hour. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you. Well, let's begin sort of with what one often hears, an analogy between Elon Musk and Steve Jobs for obvious reasons. I mean, both of them geniuses, both of them inventors, both of them visionaries. And yet, in many respects, I think Elon Musk, he had three industries covered. Jobs had only two. But in addition to that, they get compared to each other a lot because they're both very difficult men.
Yeah, I think the biggest comparison would be around their personality. You, especially for the employees, you can be a hero one day and a zero the next. It's kind of, what have you done for me lately around the office? And they can both be very temperamental and demanding. And Elon certainly has that, that Jobsian sort of attention to detail. It's funny because Elon's more of kind of an engineer physicist, but I've seen him go around inspecting the cars and he's pulling down the sun visor and saying, I don't like the seam on this thing. And so you can definitely see the similarities.
Well, as far as employees, it's like, I'd rather they fear me than love me, that old axiom. There is a story that one of his employees had a child that was being born, and he, that is the employee, asked to get out of a Tesla event. And according to the story, at least, Musk was incorrigible and didn't want him to miss the event. But then now Musk denies that.
This comes from my book, the quote from this employee, and then Elon did subsequently deny it on Twitter. The one frustrating thing is that it's about 10 words in the book, and it's kind of blown up and taken a life on its own. I completely stand by my reporting. It took place during a very difficult period for Tesla. It was 2008, and the company was basically on the verge of bankruptcy almost every day, and it was all hands on deck. You were sort of on call basically as an employee, and employees were helping. They were turning back their salary to help the company make it through. And so I don't think Elon goes around today asking people to miss the birth of their children, but during this very difficult period, this was the type of thing that happened.
Well, there is also, you say for an engineer, he could be enraged the way Steve Jobs was and difficult. How was he in terms of, get a picture of his personality and maybe his origins and everything before we get into these amazing accomplishments that he's been associated with. But when I had Walter Isaacson on, who was a biographer of Steve Jobs, I asked him, did Steve Jobs give any money that we know of to the impoverished or to people in need or causes that were philanthropic? And Isaacson, who had complete access, and you had pretty much complete access to Elon Musk, didn't have the answer to that. Do we know, even anonymously? I know he gave a lot of money for robotics, but I'm talking about charities or philanthropy here.
I guess you could look at the question a couple ways. One would be if you consider going to Mars a reasonable thing for humans to do.
And, he considered it saving humanity.
Right. Yeah. So if you think of this as the ultimate charity, kind of an exit plan for humans, he's spending a ton of his billions of dollars of his own money chasing that goal. If you, as far as sort of a Bill Gates, Warren Buffett type, I'm pledging my fortune to charity, there isn't that. The thing I did run across is quite anonymously, he will, one of his employees will say, hey, my kid's school wants to start this new program, and all of a sudden $500,000 show up, and there was something like the Nikola Tesla Museum. They were trying to build a museum, and I think he gave $1 million or $3 million to that. So he seems to do this on more of like a one-off basis where he gets interested.
He did start his own private school called Ad Astra, right, down in Los Angeles. This is for a lot of these kids who work with him and his own kids.
You know? Right. This is just coming out now. I mean, it's a recent development, and it's basically a very, very small school for Elon's children and maybe a handful of other SpaceX employees, and just being the idea that the current schools kind of weren't going fast enough or meeting the needs of his kids.
Well, whatever money he gave or didn't give for whatever causes, it now turns out, there's a big article about this, that the government subsidized him to an estimated close to $5 billion in terms of government support. He knew to go to the government for a lot of these projects of his, and he knew he could get revenue.
Yeah, no question. It's been an interesting story for the companies. I think with SpaceX, a lot of times people see a NASA contract for billions of dollars and sort of think of that as a subsidy, although I would argue that's...
You wouldn't call it a subsidy.
Not at all, because SpaceX is the only company we have right now that can take us to the space station and that soon will take up astronauts, and they're doing business for the government that otherwise we wouldn't have done, or we would have to go overseas to get that business done. In the case of Tesla, there were moments in that company's history where it got a huge loan from the Department of Energy that Tesla likely wouldn't have survived without that loan. People get rebates for the electric cars. SolarCity is in the energy business and has some similar rebates if you go solar, obviously. But of course, you know, their competitors all have huge subsidies as well. There's a reason our gas is so cheap, and the energy companies that SolarCity is going against have their own perks. But the funny thing, you know, recently Tesla's been building this really large battery factory in Nevada, and for its cars and for home storage of energy you would get from solar panels.
And we can't even get enough of them out there. I mean, there's such a demand.
Right. He just sort of announced this and they sold out through next year. But then equally, this Nevada, Texas, California, I think Arizona, we're all fighting to get a piece of Elon Musk. And the reason that figure gets so high is the packages that these states were putting together to be in the Elon Musk business were quite lucrative.
Yeah, well, Nevada was able to welcome him across the state border because of the deal that they were able to offer.
Right.
We're talking to Ashley Vance, who's a technology writer for Bloomberg Business Week, which is based in Palo Alto. His new book is Elon Musk, Tesla, SpaceX, and the Quest for a Fantastic Future. And we're going to talk about that vision of a fantastic future with Ashley Vance, who, as I said earlier, had access to Elon Musk, which in itself is no small matter. You're from South Africa originally. That didn't necessarily pave the way for you, did it?
No. I mean, it was kind of it's kind of a story how I eventually managed to get Elon to do the interviews. When I'd done a cover story on him for Business Week in 2012, and especially after I visited the SpaceX factory, I was blown away and knew that's what I wanted to write about. And Elon ended up being a much better interview than I had given him credit for before I'd spent time with him. He would answer questions authentically and really seemed to put some thought into these things. And so I thought maybe I'd want to do a book, and I went and asked him, and he said, look, you know, 8 or 9 people have asked me to do a book before, and I sent them all away. I think I want to do my own book. And so I sort of listened to that, and then I went off and sold the book and came back to him and told him I'd sold the book. And
you sound like you're made of the similar metal Elon Musk. This won't take no for an answer.
I mean, there were, you know, as you start doing your reporting and hearing these stories about him, you think, okay, what would Elon do in this situation? And so I went for 18 months of reporting. I interviewed on the order of 200 people. And then all of a sudden I was at home one day, and up on my caller ID popped Elon Musk. And he said, I can either make life pretty difficult on you from here on out, or maybe I'll cooperate with the book now. And we kind of had a meeting and hashed everything out, and he did cooperate.
Well, I must say, you know, the biography does not put a halo over his head. I mean, you get into some of the tougher things about him and more arrogant sides of him and narcissistic sides, which many people have commented on who not only work for him but who knew him one way or another. And like many of these people who come along maybe once a century like he does, there are facets to his character that really sort of repel, as well as many things, of course, that are attractive about him. He can be charming. We're going to actually hear some cuts from Elon Musk in the course of this hour. But let's talk a little bit about his background before we get into all of the extraordinary feats that he has brought to the fore. He's talked a lot about his adversity. He's been open about that. He got bullied a great deal. He was a boy genius. He was always reading, just, you know, doing nothing but reading. There may have been some brutality from his father. We don't necessarily know a lot about that, I realize. But all of these things don't necessarily give us the picture of what his mother probably, maybe best of all, called a boy genius. I mean, that's maybe the only way to... In other words, people think, well, he got kicked out of PayPal, or he had malaria, or he had an infant son who died, and maybe this explains his difficulties or whatever. He was a boy genius.
And pretty misunderstood in a lot of ways. I think as I dug into his family life and went back to talk to his friends and his school chums, it was pretty interesting because I had never seen this part of Elon sort of brought out. I mean, he was a know-it-all kind of kid, but he had this amazing, he read every book at the library, he read every book in the bookstore that was near their
every
house.
Comic book, too.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a really good point. He was devouring science fiction, and one of the points I make in the book is that I think other kids take these things as interesting stories. For Elon, it seemed to be a calling from a very young age, and, you know, he was this real loner. I mean, it was sad. People said he just didn't have friends over for sleepover. He didn't have a best friend. Nobody knew. And then his family thought he was a genius. But the other kids at school, they knew he was bright. But they said he might have been the least likely person they would have picked.
Yeah, they kicked him down the stairs at one point. I mean, there was a lot of that bullying that he endured. But let's hear what he says about he's talking about how a voracious reader he was as a child. And you'll hear a woman's voice. It's actually his mother.
I read all the comics I could buy or that they'd let me read at the bookstore before chasing me away. I read everything I could get my hands on from when I woke up to when I went to sleep. At one point, I really ran out of books and started reading the encyclopedia.
And he has a photographic memory, so he could remember everything. Anytime I had a question, my daughter Tosca would say, "Call Genius Boy."
Oh, there it is. A genius boy who wants to save humanity and really has that mission, even though he can sometimes be very inhuman in his dealings with other people.
Well, and one of those stories is pretty funny. So he was out with with Tosca, his sister, and Kimball, his brother, and their cousins when they were a kid. And the other kids went outside and they were afraid. They were in Africa and they complained that they were scared of the dark. And Elon said, "What? You know, why are you scared of the dark? It's only the absence of light." I mean, he would always come out with these very logical things that the other kids did not respond to.
Well, also, you capture the sense of a man, maybe a genius, but has great insecurities. And ultimately, from your way of thinking, he's like a general.
I mean...
Well, which general?
His ex-wife, Justine, she always thought of him as an Alexander the Great, Genghis Khan type figure. I think of him... We were talking about Steve Jobs earlier. To me, he's almost a little bit more like Edison, where he assembles these armies of engineers within this one giant building at SpaceX or Tesla, and then seems to have an actual knack for taking their products and turning them into commercial things. And these people follow him with a zeal that... you know, if it's not a general, it's on the order of sort of a deity. I talked to people who would be fired by Elon and still looked up to him and sort of worshipped him. And they work harder and devote more of their life to him than a normal employee does.
But there's real leadership qualities there. I mean, one
absolutely.
Has to concede. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And also, you mentioned his wife. Actually, is he in the third marriage to the same wife that he was married? He had two wives.
It's very tricky. So yeah. He had a first wife, and then he married Tallulah Riley, an actress, and he divorced her. Then he remarried her, and then he's currently going through a divorce with her, but may be getting back together with her.
Some of the stories of, which divorce was it where she went and discovered that her credit card didn't work anymore, and that was the
first one.
His way of saying we're getting divorced.
Right.
Didn't he also say at one point, how many hours do I need to devote to a woman? 10 hours, he figured in this mathematical calibrated brain of his.
That comes from the book as well. I caught him between divorces, and he was trying to get back on the dating scene, and I asked him how that was going. He said, I just don't have enough time. How many hours does a woman want a week?
Well, let's talk about the accomplishments because they are pretty extraordinary. But before we do, why is he so afraid of artificial intelligence? I mean, just like he wants to colonize Mars, does he think the robots are going to take over? He's invested a lot in robots, too.
Well, he seems to have he's one of this group of people that really believes the technology is advancing more quickly than we might think, and that really we have no proper safeguards put in place if it does start advancing on its own. It's pretty funny because he's very good friends with Larry Page at Google, and Elon splits his time between LA and Silicon Valley. And when he's in Silicon Valley, he doesn't have a home. So he either stays at a hotel or at friends' houses. And so he'll sleep over at Larry Page's house. and he thinks Larry is a good-hearted human being, but he thinks Larry may well be creating something that will destroy mankind by accident. And Elon's been investing in AI companies to keep an eye on them. And now he's starting to write papers about this. He's very afraid of it.
Well, he's got a lot of visions about the future, not only colonizing Mars and artificial intelligence, but solar cities, vision of a solar future. Obviously, Solar City is behind that to a great degree, and other kinds of energies. Let's talk about Tesla first, though, because when he started selling Teslas, he went into his own stores and his own showrooms, and that created a problem. I mean, in Texas, it's illegal, for example, isn't it still?
It's still an ongoing problem. Tesla doesn't have dealerships like a traditional auto company does. They either sell to you off a computer or sell direct. They don't charge commission. The salespeople don't earn commissions on their sales. And Tesla doesn't really try to make money off servicing cars like a traditional dealer was. So they're this huge threat to the dealership model. And it's very strange. These laws are sort of state by state. And so in some states, Tesla's been able to set up dealerships. Other states, they've been blocked. I guess all these rules date back to the early days of cars, when the car manufacturers would sort of take advantage of the car dealers.
But the car dealer groups are supporting deregulation now, I think, aren't they?
Some of them are, but like you see in Texas, where the car dealer lobby is blocking Tesla.
And all of this investment into space, SpaceX has really broken into, went into the space station, for example, but also if you had said to most people a few years ago, Boeing Lockheed is going to have real competition, nobody would have believed it.
No, Tesla probably gets more attention because it's the consumer-facing company. SpaceX, to me, is his greatest and most unlikely achievement. Even 3 years ago when I started writing the book, SpaceX had some successful flights, but Lockheed, Boeing, Arianespace in Europe, the Russians still thought it was more or less a joke that would inevitably have something go wrong and send it packing. And it's become sort of one of the most consistent performers in the aerospace industry.
Well, we have a cut from a 2014 TED Talk. Elon Musk talked about why he wanted to explore space and build rockets. Let's hear.
I did build rockets when I was a kid, but I didn't think I'd be involved in this. It was really more from the standpoint of what are the things that need to happen in order for the future to be an exciting and inspiring one. And I really think there's a fundamental difference, if you sort of look into the future, between a humanity that is a space-faring civilization that's out there exploring the stars on multiple planets. And I think that's really exciting. And compared with one where we are forever confined to Earth until some eventual extinction event.
Well, there he is again talking about extinction.
I mean, yeah.
And the future and saving humanity is sort of the undercurrent of that again, isn't it?
This is his life's calling. Some people think it's a joke. Unless he's lying to himself and his family and doing a really good job of it, it's an authentic calling for him.
Well, but look at what he's achieved. I mean, you have to suspend your disbelief with some of these ambitions about like colonizing Mars and everything. But at the same time, what he's achieved is pretty extraordinary by any standards.
He's 43 years old. He's made and lost fortunes many times over. Even the stuff he had done just by the time he was 30, this company Zip2 and PayPal would have been enough for most people. The thought that within 10 years after that, he would have created three industrial companies that were even bigger is, that's what starts to make you think this guy can actually do some of these things.
What do you think is the greatest achievement? Do you think it's the space stuff? From your perspective as a reporter and who's covered so much in his accomplishments.
From a business standpoint and a technology standpoint, to me, SpaceX should not exist. It's unbelievable that it does. Only nations have ever done anything like it. He used to, when he first came out, he said, oh, we're going to fly for $60 million. A Boeing Lockheed similar flight today would cost about $300 million. Everyone thought he was making these figures up. SpaceX has lived up to them. It may even get cheaper. They're now doing a launch almost every month, and that puts them right on pace with Europe and the Russians. And they've invented technology that everybody's copying. And CEOs at these other companies have been fired over the last couple of years. They've all had to start reusable rocket programs from scratch to match SpaceX. And it's for America, it's an amazing story. They make 90% of their rockets in Los Angeles. All the competitors buy Russian engines for their spacecraft and essentially assemble parts. So this is the U.S.'s only response to China and Russia.
Well, you tell a story in your book about one of his chief engineers talking about how something's going to cost a pretty high amount of money. And he said, come on, it's the same principle as a can opener.
Yeah, there's a couple times he does this in the book that are, I think, really funny. This thing is like an actuator, just sort of a device to turn something on or off on the spacecraft, and people are used to them costing $50,000 or something like that. And Elon says, I'll give you $5,000. This guy has never built one before, and so he has to figure this out. There's another guy who comes in, and Elon says, I want all of the electronics in the rocket to cost $10,000. And this guy had been working at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, and he says, Elon, it would cost $10,000 to have a lunch to talk about these electronics at JPL.
Talk a little bit. We're coming up on a break here, but about the Hyperloop. Where do we stand on that? And we're going to actually have San Francisco to L.A. in 30 minutes, thanks to Elon Musk.
Well, this goes to the point you were making before. When he first announced the Hyperloop, I think a lot of people stood up and said, here's Elon Musk announcing another crazy thing. And since time, it's at least gained traction from a business standpoint. Elon's building a test track in Texas that'll be about 5 miles long. He doesn't want to commercialize it himself right now, so other groups would be able to test the track. And then there's a company, Hyperloop Technologies, that is looking to build a track from L.A. to Las Vegas, and they have $50 million in funding.
Well, we also have a lot of people who are no doubt interested in Elon Musk or want to go on the record here and maybe make comments. I invite you to do that. We involve you, our listeners, and this becomes interactive. You can join us now at our toll-free number. That number, 866-733-6786. Please feel free to join the program. Again, it's toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org. Some thoughts from some of you, our listeners, about some of these wild ideas, some of them brought to fruition and even moving toward fruition by Elon Musk, talking about the man, his work, and really the extraordinary accomplishments he's brought to bear. You can also, of course, make questions or comments available to us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum. Simply click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And you can also go to our Facebook page. Many ways to join us with Ashley Vance, who is technology writer for Bloomberg Business Week and also the author of Elon Musk, Tesla, SpaceX, and The Quest for a Fantastic Future. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking this hour about Elon Musk, the man and his achievements, and certainly someone who has been controversial and iconic and remains so. Ashley Vance is our guest. He's a technology writer for Bloomberg Business Week, which is based in Palo Alto, and his new book is Elon Musk, Tesla, SpaceX, and the Quest for a Fantastic Future. And we're focusing on his past as well as that fantastic future as he envisions it, and we do welcome your involvement in the program. You can join us by calling us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Particularly, I'd like to invite maybe some people who have had personal contact with Musk or have worked for him, many of them out here, but also what you think about what he envisions and what he has, as I said, achieved, which I think nobody can pretty much... well, the real question is that we've been kind of hovering around here is he saving humanity? Because in his mind, I believe that is his mission, and that's what he's doing with a lot of the work that he's doing. Or is he just a titan of industry? Or is he both? Maybe, in fact, you have some thoughts about that, but we do welcome your involvement. And you can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, which is kqed.org/forum. I was just asking Ashley a little bit off microphone about Elon Musk's politics, because I know he went to Cuba with Sean Penn, and he has dinner frequently, probably six times is pretty frequent, with the President of the United States, Barack Obama, seen probably by many people as a libertarian, but liberal on social issues. You
know? Yeah, I think he's liberal on social issues. I think he seems to have these ties with Obama that can rub some conservatives the wrong way. I think Elon has to play both sides pretty carefully because of the businesses he's in and how much business they do directly with the government or influence that he needs help with. And so he usually treads pretty carefully about what he says.
He's a smart salesman in that sense, isn't he?
Right.
And like Steve Jobs is a salesman.
Absolutely. He's quite practical about these things.
Well, could you just say, before we go to our caller, something about Dragon V2? I mean, let listeners know what it is and what the status of it is.
Yeah, SpaceX plans to take people to the space station. That's kind of their next goal. They've been doing these resupply missions, and so Dragon is the capsule that they've been using to take supplies to the space station, and then Dragon V2 is the next version of that, and it's this very updated look at what a capsule. It does not look like your 1960s sort of. It's got a drop down touchscreen display and these fancy seats and interior. And the idea would be that it could go to the space station and come back and land with exact precision wherever you want it to on Earth.
And the cost?
Well, we don't know the exact cost. I mean, it's still way cheaper than what these things usually cost to develop. I know the first Dragon was maybe on the order of $1 billion, which would have been probably a tenth what had ever been done before for a capsule.
What does he conceive of as the cost of the Hyperloop? I mean, especially if you're going to L.A. in 30 minutes.
He's talked about it totally hypothetically on the order of $6 billion to $12 billion, so making it kind of a fraction of California's high-speed rail. But I think it has to be taken with a huge grain of salt because we have no idea what it would actually cost to build the Hyperloop.
And our governor, who has some visionary qualities to him as well, you know, doesn't necessarily see this as competitive to his notion of a high-speed rail or what he envisions of a high-speed rail.
Yeah, well, Elon came up with the Hyperloop pretty much because he thinks the high-speed rail is a complete joke and that it's the most expensive slow train you could kind of envision under the parameters that you have, and he wanted to put out a competing vision. It's just, again, we have no idea if it can even be done yet, even though people are trying now.
Talking about Elon Musk with his biographer, Ashley Vance, who's here with us in studio, talking about colonizing Mars, about well, the relationship between Elon Musk and humanity, as well as his employees, Tesla's, there's so much to talk about, SpaceX, and let's go to your calls. We begin, Jeff, with you. Good morning.
Yeah, thanks. I guess my question would be for the Elon Musks of the world.
There aren't that many, by the way. Let's get that.
Yeah, yeah, there's no doubt he's probably one of the most extraordinary people that's ever lived. But I guess my question would be, when you get to a point where you're already, you know, you're already a billionaire, the motivation, I get it, you want to save humanity in case the apocalypse or whatever, but, you know, wouldn't that money best be spent on the problems we have today, cancer and education? And I'm just wondering, I just don't get it sometimes. Just don't get it why they feel they need to do these things that, again, they're sexy and they're cool and all that, but all that money you're investing in a Hyperloop, wouldn't that be great to put that into cancer? Because that's something that can hit any one of us, even him and his own kids, during his lifetime. Why do all this other stuff in space and stuff?
So well, it's sort of the tenor of the question I started out with about, Steve Jobs, notorious for not necessarily supporting what many think of as good causes here at home. You ever broached this with Elon Musk?
Only a little bit, and I don't want to answer for Elon, but he's a very logical guy, and I think while we may not see existential risk for the human species as as pressing of a threat as cancer or some of these big health issues. Elon does. In his head, this makes complete sense. And if you think about global warming, maybe it's a much easier case to make, because then he's one of the only people on the earth that's doing a couple of practical things to actually address this problem in a meaningful way.
Well, he is, I think he's been called a techno-utopian, you know. I mean, he does see possibilities here on Earth as well, not just that with his fear of human extinction notwithstanding and all his talk about it, we can move forward and we can move into some kind of techno-utopia here?
Well, perhaps a bit. I think he's less in that camp maybe than some other people in Silicon Valley who I've covered for a long time. I think he believes in the wonders of technology, but he doesn't run around spouting, technology is the answer for everything. He just happens to have settled on these couple of problems as he wants an exit plan for people. And then just in case we need to keep living here, he wants it to be possible in the meantime.
And we'll bring on more of your calls. We go to Michael. Michael, join us.
Morning.
Hi.
I'm calling to make a general comment, but it was originally inspired by a teaser interview you guys did on the California Report this morning with Ashley. The woman doing the interview expressed some what I thought was very strange suspicions about Mr. Musk. Motives and why he was always talking about how he's been inspired by going to space and other technological achievements since he's been a small child. It's like, well, look, before Mr. Musk started SpaceX.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Michael. We've got you're breaking up here, and we're not hearing clearly what you're asking. But I think you got the tenor of the question, Ashley.
I think so, sort of where his motivations come from. The one story I was thinking of is that Elon had made a bunch of money at PayPal, and he had this fortune, and he went off to see...
They didn't go off. They kind of removed him, didn't they?
But he went off after he'd made his money. They did have a coup and sort of push him out. But he went to the NASA website to see what NASA's plans were for Mars. And he expected to find this very concrete, this is how we're going to explore it and maybe one day colonize it. And he found nothing there. And so this is really where SpaceX started, was that Elon wanted to, he was depressed that America was no longer really into exploring. He was depressed that we didn't have these high hopes for space and for Mars. And so before he started a commercial space company, he actually wanted to send mice or a plant to Mars as kind of a grand gesture for humanity to inspire people to dream about these things again. And that's again where these motivations come from. He wants people to think, that's kind of why I put this in the subtitle of my book, that we do have a fantastic future, or that we might have a fantastic future.
As he envisions it, yeah. What happened at PayPal?
Well, at PayPal, he had essentially, there were two camps, there were warring camps, and Elon came out on the losing side. He had been a very tough but effective boss. This company was doing very well. It was getting tons of users, but he had a sort of technology battle. There were two founding camps, and he had a technology battle with the other founding camp. When then one day he goes off to take his first vacation in a very long time. It was actually his honeymoon with his wife that they had put off for about a year. They were going to Sydney for the Olympics. And the minute he hopped on a plane, all the other executives called a meeting and staged a coup and kicked him out of the company. By the time he landed, he was no longer the CEO.
He still gets along with Peter Thiel, doesn't he?
It's amazing. It was Peter Thiel, David Sachs, Max Levchin, and for a period of time, they did not get along, but they've all patched things up. They even produce movies together. Thank You for Smoking was a movie they produced together.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Let me thank Michael for his call. We'll go to another caller here, and we'll welcome Shell. You're on. Good morning, Shell.
Hi, good morning. I was wondering if he's come out with, Elon Musk has come out with any statements similar to opposing or in agreement with Google, and people have written a book about Google saying that it's the government's place to ensure that the unemployment, which is going to occur with future manufacturing processes, that the increase in unemployment will not be drastic. Well, not much of a negative effect. It's left up to the government.
Yeah, I don't think Elon, as far as I know, Elon hasn't come out with a huge position on, if you're talking about kind of autonomous technology and the idea of robots and factories, he's more been objecting to the subjugation of humans, really, to machines and an artificial intelligence, less on sort of an employment level and more in that we would all be kind of slaves to these things and they would be our rulers. And obviously in the Tesla factory today, they make heavy use of robotics. I just haven't heard Elon have a position on that particular part of the AI question.
And thank you, Shell, for the call. Here's Robert, who writes on our website, this is hagiography. And by the way, for those of you who don't know what that means, it means making someone into a saint or putting a halo over their head. Happening right in front of us, Elon Musk is an odd duck with plenty of vision and is involved with interesting high-profile ventures. He has no engineering degree. He has a BS in economics and a BS in physics. There are plenty of excellent self-taught engineers, but PayPal and Musk's other foundational activities are financial service companies and sales and marketing operations. He seems to have a lot of interest in engineering, but I don't see evidence that he ever did it for a living. Journalists are fond of tossing genius around.
Well, it's funny because when I first started out doing the book, people said to me, Elon comes up with design things for Tesla and he helps design part of the rockets. And I really thought that was BS. I thought this is all part of the Elon legend. The one thing that you'll find if you go actually talk to hundreds of people is that Elon can hold his own with any aerospace engineer. Certainly there are people who are experts in his field and he's not some savant that can just bowl them over, but he can absolutely hold his own. He does come up with very specific things around the rockets and the cars, and his engineers give him full credit for that. He's not always right, but he has come up with a lot of inventions. And SpaceX in particular, the things that they have done with materials and advanced manufacturing are now being copied by other industries. And almost in every case, it was something that Elon asked for.
Also, like his mother said, he had an eidetic memory. I mean, I don't know how you establish what genius is, but usually so-called photographic or eidetic memory is associated with genius. And, you know what he reminds me of? I had an uncle, not a blood uncle, who actually owned an ice cream factory in Cleveland. And he was, I don't even think he went to college, but he knew more about the engineering of that company than the engineers he hired. I mean, it was just that kind of mind he had. And I would call him a genius, you know.
Elon talks about this in the book a little bit. He compares his brain, you know, in a computer, there's the CPU, which does the math calculations, and there's the GPU, the graphics processor, which is the stuff that makes the video games and the movies look great. And Elon thinks he has sort of the equivalent of a GPU in his head. He seems able to hold images in his head and sort of manipulate them in 3D and know how things are going to interact and see the physics kind of in an innate way. And I thought this was complete BS until I talked to so many people, that even people who do not really care for Elon, who backed this up. And I certainly don't want anyone to think the book is hagiography, because I tried to tell all sides to this, and there are pluses and minuses.
This listener writes, let's face it, as much as Steve Jobs is now revered by everyone, including myself, the impact that Elon Musk will likely have on civilization will overshadow my iPhone 6, iPad, and Mac like Everest does to Mount Tamalpais.
This is the big debate people always want to know, is who's better between Elon and Steve Jobs. It's such a difficult thing. On one hand, Steve Jobs makes consumer products. On the other hand, he's put a computer in all of our hands with all the world's information. I mean, I couldn't even get around a city without this device. I think certainly you can make a case that if Elon is still to be determined. I mean, he has to get a mass-produced electric car that everybody can afford out. He's got to get the reusable rockets to totally change the economics of space travel. If he does those things, if he has some significant impact on global warming, then okay, I think you can start making the case for Elon on that one.
Well, let me read some more comments. Here's a Facebook comment from a listener who writes, I just finished this book. It's a good one. Gives a balanced perspective. I'd like to know more about Elon, but I'm pretty sure I would not enjoy working for him. Another listener writes, I would never buy a Tesla car on principle. I've watched a number of accolade-filled videos about Elon Musk, which seem to have been deliberately scattered around the internet by a public relations firm, and that always describe him in the best possible terms, as if he were tech's equivalent to Vladimir Putin. These videos are thinly veiled propaganda disguised as journalism. And meanwhile, I observe a definite trend in his personality affecting his work and personal life of throwing people under the bus. This is not a virtue. He comes off as a self-serving user of people who lacks empathy, which speaks to a lack of character. There is a self-same trend in the startup world that surely Musk has helped to bring about. Don't know how to manage? Just fire people. Don't know how to maintain a relationship? Just dump the broad. I'm surprised Musk's kids aren't in an orphanage already. Pretty harsh.
It's pretty harsh. There's elements of maybe truth in there. I don't think Elon...
Well, not about it. He's pretty devoted to his kids.
He's absolutely devoted to his kids. And then he doesn't just go around firing people. It's more that he would demand a ton of you, and then you're either in the camp that is okay with this sort of lifestyle or you're not. And the one thing that I found that was really surprising, because both companies have a reputation for burning through employees, is that the top executives at both Tesla and SpaceX, the 4, 5, 6 people who really run the companies, they've all been there 10 to 12 years and share kind of Elon's visions. And you know, that's what these people feel like they're achieving, something much bigger than just running a company.
Well, as we might have imagined, we get all kinds of sides heard from in terms of a character who inspires much controversy. Here's Eric, who writes, I don't doubt that Mr. Musk has real entrepreneurial skills, but Tesla, unlike PayPal, seems to be mostly a creature of crony capitalism, as it has received various government subsidies, including a federal loan, reduced property taxes, etc. I don't have a problem with the government funding basic research or giving consumers an incentive to use clean energy alternatives, but I object to the government trying to pick winners in the industrial space, especially when a company like Tesla produces a product that is targeting a very affluent customer base.
Well, this is the big knock on Tesla, and it's a fair one right now. They make a car for rich people. And the point is not that the point that Elon would make is not that this is where the company wants to end up. This is where they started. Just like any technology begins, the computer was very expensive, and then eventually you make cheaper and cheaper models over time. And so the goal has always been to get to this less expensive model. And the other thing that I would point out, not that I'm here to defend Elon, he can do that himself, but if you look at not only what Tesla has built with the electric car and making that an interesting thing for all car makers now to get into, he's built this charging network of charging stations across the United States, Europe, and Asia. He's, in essence, built the car and a fueling network
which is what a lot of those who were advocating hydrogen should be used instead of fossil fuels were saying there needs to be. Even Schwarzenegger when he was governor.
I mean, if you're saying, oh, he got a government loan to go along with this. I mean, this is unprecedented what he's doing, government scale things.
A lot of listeners are talking about this. I know you didn't like the S word, subsidies word, but they are. Let me just read one more email here, and then I want to get to a caller who's right on point. Rich says, you have to admire a guy who can get enormous taxpayer subsidies to build these cars to start with and then get the taxpayers to grant even more tax credits to subsidize rich people in their purchases. On top of that, he claims emission-free on the back of each car when sold, in spite of the need to plug the thing into a power source with emissions. Quite an operator, this fellow.
He's gifted.
Let me bring a caller in. Mike, join us. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I understood that he had a network of swap-outs of batteries for electric cars in Israel, and you just touched on it briefly, but it seemed like a great idea. Do you know how that's working out? You kind of just go in, swap out your battery, get a new one, and be on your way.
Yeah. There was a company called Better Place that was building that in Israel, and they raised, I want to say, on the order of $1 billion and then basically have folded. And if they haven't filed for bankruptcy, they're near bankruptcy. And Tesla is now the only company that's kind of building swap-out stations.
So the possibility here?
Well, Tesla has said that they want to build these swap-out stations. When I've talked to Elon, though, what he's telling me now is that the range is getting so high on the battery packs, Tesla thinks they're going to get to 500 miles of range, that the need for kind of an instantaneous swap-out at these charging stations becomes almost a moot point at that stage.
We got these power pack batteries, though, that he says the need for them is crazy, beyond control.
This is on the houses too, yeah. Right? So Tesla now is this very strange creature that's not only making cars but is making battery storage for homes and offices. And so if you have solar panels, you store the excess energy in here so you can run at night or during periods when you want to pay less to the grid. And after he announced that, they sold $800 million worth through 2016.
Let's go to more calls. Bill, join us. You're on.
Hi. If you would bear with me for a second, I'm going to describe a kid's experiment with a little red wagon. Let's say a boy stands in the wagon, holds baseballs, throws them to the rear, and the wagon goes forward. This is the equivalent, in principle, of the reaction engines that have been used up until now, including nuts. With reaction engines, and he's done a remarkable job in improving efficiency, you can get to orbit. You may be able to get to the moon. Certainly, with great effort and time, you can get to Mars. But you will not go to the end of the solar system, even to Jupiter, with that technology. What is needed is new physics, and that is never discussed. At least a significant portion of the dollars spent should be on physics that get us to that point of levitation devices and anti-grav propulsion, whatever that looks like. And otherwise, we're lost.
Elon Musk doesn't want to get us to Jupiter. He just wants to get us to Mars. But you're certainly right to bring up the possibility of alternative physics. Just like alternative geometry, we should maybe be looking more in that direction than we have been traditionally. And let me thank you for the call. I'm actually looking at speaking about cost and different directions, email from Robert who says, considering Musk has a humanitarian drive, does the author have any idea if Musk is considering solutions to the water problem, which look to be long-term and essential to the health of the world?
I've never heard him talk about that. I would say his plate has been pretty full, especially the last couple of years with the pace at which his companies are expanding. And, I just haven't had I will do my best to poke around on that. I've never talked to him about that.
What about the accusation that he's a man without empathy? That, he can commiserate with humanity in the abstract or, feel for civilization or something, but on a day-to-day level, he may command respect from people and everything, but he can't empathize. This is what you frequently hear. Maybe he's too self-centered or narcissistic or too in his own world.
There's certainly some truth to it. I think with his family, he has sort of a different relationship than he does with many people. They see a funny, charming, emotional Elon. A very close group of friends see a similar sort of character, but we're talking on the order of maybe four or five people in that group. And then it was something I heard again and again and again from employees. They see him as not having empathy, certainly for how your day's going, things that are going on. Maybe in your family, it's sort of the mission of what needs to get done is the most important thing. I think he does have this strange brand of empathy, which is empathy for mankind. And he feels that he would break into tears. And he feels this on a deep level, this sort of peril that mankind is in. And that's where I saw, okay, this is not an emotionless figure. This guy just has emotion for the entire species.
I'll bring another caller on. Scott joins us from Palo Alto. Scott, you're on. Welcome.
Hey, good morning. I just this is a little bit of a nebulous comment, but I wanted to know from your guest, what do you think Mr. Musk shares in common? We like to compare and contrast people in society, and one of the other things we do is we tend to either hate or love them, and we can only look at their lightness or their darkness, and we need to realize that, if it's JFK or if it's Steve Jobs or if it's Elon Musk, with all the great things that come with these strong leaders and creatives, there's almost always a dark side, and it always peeks its head out. But for some reason, we just can't accept that paradox. But what I want to suggest is that his leadership is probably not unique. I think he just has courage. JFK just said, we're going to go to the moon basically because we can. He showed the leadership and the will, and then everybody kind of aggregates around that mission. So I think that's probably where his lack of empathy comes, is that you've got to sacrifice some things in order to reach that mission. But I was wondering if your guest could share some things that he has in common with some of those other great leaders that we've seen throughout the last several decades. Thanks.
Thank you, Scott, for the call. Actually, I'm interested to hear what you have to say, obviously, Ashley, but what comes to mind just from Scott's call is that some of these people who are so driven feel they're going to work 20 hours a day and they're going to work zealously, so their employees and people who work with them ought to have the same standards, the same ethos.
I think he makes great points, and you do as well. The Elon, in a lot of ways, sets the bar exactly like you said, extremely high for himself. And then if he's calculating kind of how things should get done on some level, it's kind of like if everyone was me, how fast and how efficiently would this get done? And then that's kind of what I expect from people. And Elon works 7 days a week and many, many hours a day. I think he is different. You know, I interview all these CEOs. To me, he sets the bar higher and he does ask more of people. And he
also asks more of himself. Yeah.
Absolutely. This that he's running two companies at the same time, even Steve Jobs, when he was doing Pixar on the side, it was nothing like what Elon's doing. I mean, he certainly has people at both companies who do the day-to-day operations, but Elon knows everything that's going on. He would come to our meetings with these huge bags under his eyes. I mean, this is not a man who sleeps very much at all.
But come on. He lost an infant son. He should commiserate with employees who have children and all those kinds of things, at least in the best of all possible worlds, or ideally when you know sorrow, you should be able to empathize more with those who have, formidable kind of barriers or obstacles or sorrow. Here's a Facebook remark, though, from Chuck, who says, responding to the caller who asked why the Elon Musks of the world don't focus on, for example, curing cancer, think about the contribution Steve Jobs made toward technology and communications. These technologies have had an incalculable effect on advancing the field of medical research, arguably contributing more to curing cancer than anyone else. And Sean writes on our website, I think it's a good thing that we're going to SpaceX and private companies to send people to the ISS, the initial space, International Space Station. This frees up NASA to go to Mars. I think that Musk means well, but I don't think private companies can yet get to Mars, not before the government.
No way. the SpaceX will get to Mars before NASA does, I'm pretty sure.
Well, the book again is Elon Musk, Tesla, SpaceX, and the Quest for a Fantastic Future, the author Ashley Vance. Good to have you with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, our listeners. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. We invite certainly your emails and thoughts about what you like that you hear on Forum or what you'd like to hear on Forum. You can email us, forum@kqed.org. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Larberg and Susan Britton. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. And our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer, I already said, Danny Bringer. Well, it's twice. He does sometimes more work than many of us. For all of us at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.